Hello, everybody, and welcome to the sixth episode of Unheard Voices here on CGMQ 88.9 FM. I am your host, Caroline, and for every week, this show will report and discuss Canadian and international political news and why they all pertain to us here in the Eastern Townships. And as always, with a goal of highlighting and recognizing patterns of inequality in our society. For today's episode, we are going to talk about International Women's Day as it was celebrated last week on March 8th. I will talk about its history, its politics, and its impacts in Canada. And also, I thought about connecting this celebration with the current migrant crisis that we are observing here in North America and in Europe. So I'm going to share some different realities that women across the globe have to live in. Let's begin. First of all, let's see how International Women's Day came to be. So in 1909, in New York City, there was a National Women's Day organized by the Socialist Party of America. On February 28th, people rallied and showed support for the women textile workers. It was in the hope of bettering the working conditions, the pay, and the treatment of these women working in the textile industry. A year later, there was a second International Conference of Working Women in Copenhagen. During that conference, Clara Zetkin, the leader of the Women's Office for the Social Democratic Party in Germany, introduced the idea of an International Women's Day. And the 100 women from the 17 countries that were present unanimously approved the suggestion, and the celebration came to be. The first official one took place on March 19, in 1911, in Austria, Denmark, Germany, and Switzerland. Campaigns took place defending women's right to work, to vote, to hold public office, and to end discrimination. Now, it was just before World War I where women in Europe held rallies for peace and for solidarity that discussions over the official date took place, and it was finally agreed to mark it on March 8th in 1913. 62 years later, in 1975, it was officially recognized by the United Nations. And finally, on the 100-year anniversary of the first International Women's Day, in 2011, U.S. President Barack Obama proclaimed the month of March to be Women's History Month, calling all Americans to celebrate and remember, quote, the extraordinary accomplishments of women in shaping the country's history, quote. Now focusing on Canada, Manitoba was the first ever province to give women the right to vote in the provincial elections in 1916. And can you guess what was the last province to give it? Indeed, it was our own Quebec. In 1940, 24 years later. In the case of federal elections, it was in 1918 that female citizens over 21 were able to vote, thanks to the suffragettes. However, it wasn't until the 1940s that Canadian women of color, including Chinese and Hindu, were allowed, and it was even later for Canadian Indigenous women by virtue of the Indian Act. For this year's International Women's Day, the Canadian theme was Every Woman Counts. And for the occasion, Prime Minister Trudeau issued a statement. Quote, each and every day, women and girls help shape Canada into a fairer and stronger country. As we mark International Women's Day, we celebrate and recognize the achievements of women and girls in Canada and reaffirm our commitment to removing systemic barriers to advance gender equality in Canada and around the world." End quote. He then proceeded by highlighting the country's efforts and action. This includes the Women Entrepreneurship Strategy, which provides funding to address systemic barriers to women's equality and advance their full and equal participation in the economy through greater access to financing, mentorship, and training. There is also Canada's Feminist International Assistance Policy, who, quoting Trudeau, guides our efforts to advance gender equality around the world. In 2021 and 22, Canada allocated 99% of its bilateral international development assistance towards initiatives that either targeted or integrated gender equality and the empowerment of women and girls. This included funding to tackle gender-based discrimination and to provide access to sexual and reproductive health services to ensure women and girls can exercise their right to make decisions about their own bodies. End quote. And finally, we have the Women's Voice and Leadership Program and Canada's co-creation of the Alliance for Feminist Movements. Talking about international partnerships and programs, this next section of the episode will pertain to women and girls in other places in the world. We are indeed observing a migrant crisis in Canada, and there is especially a debate around Roxham Road. I talked about this issue on the second episode of this show, and it is available to listen on the CGMQ website if you ever want to learn more. These observations are the same in Europe. So yes, a lot of people are moving. I think it is important to remember that immigrants in search of asylum are fleeing dangerous and threatening situations. Because of wars and humanitarian crisis, people are obligated to flee their homes. Thus, in this light and in honor of International Women's Day, I thought it would be interesting to report on different realities of women as an aim to remember the core purpose and relevance of this day. First of all, we have Afghanistan. With the Taliban in power, women are being banned from universities, from work at NGOs, from school, and they have lost many rights. Global News did a report on the current situation and they interviewed Dr. Sherfuddin Azimi, a psychologist in Kabul. He declared that many Afghan women are suffering from depression, OCD, PTSD, suicidal thoughts, and other psychological problems. He says, quote, "In some cases, the girls and women clients tell me that they don't want to be alive. They want death. They say, we don't love life. Our life is not like humans, like women in other countries. The situation is so dangerous and many women are choosing suicide or engaging in substance abuse or they are desperately trying to leave Afghanistan." End quote. They also interviewed a woman, Shokriya Itamadi, an engineer who worked for an NGO before the Taliban came into power. In the following clip, she explains her reality and also that she was up for a leadership position at her job, but was turned away because of the Taliban law.
"Each passing day feels like serving an indefinite prison sentence for women in Afghanistan.
It is like a jail. We cannot go outside. We cannot thinking about anything that we want."
Shokriya Etemadi helped deliver clean drinking water to remote areas. She was excited about starting a new position within the organization.
"You were eager to work in a leadership position. What happened?"
"I passed the interview. At the end of the interview, they said for me, you cannot join with us because of the role and recognition of Taliban. And it's so hard for me."
it's only getting harder as time goes on. She shared her story with Global News reporter Shagufa Danish. Shokriya was her family's main breadwinner, but has not been able to earn a living since last December. The Taliban barred women from going to university and working in aid agencies in their escalating attack on women's rights.
You can go on the Global News website to see the full report. Next, we have Iran. The current regime in power has been committing many human rights violations, especially towards women. CBC News interviewed two Iranian women now living in Canada. Maryam Ajaidari came to St. John's, Newfoundland in early 2016 to complete her master's degree and now works for the Association for New Canadians. She says, quote, "While women in Canada also continue to face issues like pay inequality and sexual violence, Iranian women are still fighting for the bare minimum, especially the discrimination of mothers who aren't allowed to request a birth certificate for their own child and have no custody rights in case of a divorce," end quote. In addition, Leila Moradi, who also came to St. John's to study and work for a family servant center, declared, quote, "I really feel free. I was walking in my country, but right now I can fly." Actually, because of the precarious situation in Iran, Canada applied sanctions towards the country, and on February 23rd, the Canadian Minister of Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship announced new measures to support Iranian temporary residents in Canada. These measures make extending a temporary status easier for Iranians wishing to stay here. And now to finish today's episode, the following two women are immigrants that came to Canada and are making a difference in our community. The first one is Dr. Michelle Barton Forbes. She came to the country in 2004 from Jamaica with her three young daughters. At the beginning, she was working full-time at a research fellowship while also completing her master's degree in clinical epidemiology. In addition, her husband was still not able to join her, so she was basically a single parent. She is now a pediatric infectious disease specialist. Dr. Barton Forbes is currently chief of pediatric infectious diseases at the Children's Hospital at London Health Sciences Centre in Ontario. She is also doing research and mentoring medical residents as an associate professor at Western University Schulich School of Medicine and Dentistry. During COVID, her research and expertise were especially helpful when evaluating the impacts of the virus on children's development. The other woman is named Zita Sumakuku. At the age of 34, she fled the Central African Republic with her children because they were victims of domestic violence. After a lot of stops, she finally landed in Canada. Here, she became the founder and first president of the Black Manitobans Chamber of Commerce and the second woman in Canada to have founded a chamber of commerce. She also founded an organization called Breaking the Silence on Domestic Violence. In Manitoba, she did research on domestic violence and showed that a lack of awareness is a big part of the program. Her organization now uses various communication forms like art exhibitions, conferences, and workshops to generate awareness about domestic violence and to hold both perpetrators and bystanders accountable. Sumakuku says she has finally found respite in Canada from the terrors of abuse and the hardships of being a refugee, as she's found purpose in contributing to her community. If you want more inspiring stories of Canadian immigrants, the Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada website has a section dedicated to sharing stories from immigrants across the country. That is all for this week's episode of Unheard Voices here on CGMQ. I'm your host, Caroline, and I truly hope that you enjoyed. I will see you all next week for another one. Thank you so much and have a great one.